Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Too, is that still small voice that doesn't get louder but gets clearer when we become still. And so the invitation of a long-lived life is to cultivate deep listening, listening to the wisdom of the one life that endlessly reveals herself to us in the mystery of belonging to one another. This week we had Thanksgiving, and for many of us that can be a time of loneliness, sadness, perhaps we're not with our families. I, on the other hand, had the opportunity to watch a documentary called My Life as a Turkey, about a man who lived isolated in a very wild area of Florida. And for Thanksgiving, someone gave him a bushel basket of turkey eggs, wild turkeys. He proceeded to hatch them and started gobbling to them as little fledglings. And the next thing you know, they had imprinted upon him as their mother. And so it did not want to make you eat turkey for Thanksgiving dinner after watching this beautiful documentary on his children. But it did awaken a realization that we are here for each other. And you might think that he was there for these wild turkeys, but in truth, they were there for him. And they taught him how to love at a deeper level, something I never could have imagined with my local mind, that a hermit living in the country would be learning life lessons from these tiny little wild turkeys. And so when we step out of the mind that has conclusions and opinions and judgments, and we can step into the mystery of not knowing and allow the wisdom of our heart to flower, then there is an intimacy with the universe that begins to unveil herself. Wednesday Night Live, we have our virtual call, and when we finish that satsang experience, I'll sit down in front of the TV and turn on PBS. And this week they had an exploration of the universe and the black holes in the universe. And I felt like I was experiencing a spirituality that was so much vaster than any organized religion could present. The mystery of the universe and what holds the galaxies together and the billions and trillions of light years. And it blew the mind to know that we live in an intelligent universe and that we are made out of space itself, even though we appear as form. And so what if life is showing us how to relate at a much more intimate way, to become intimate with a galaxy, to become intimate with a wild turkey, to become intimate with a Christmas tree that you purchase at Home Depot and then put it in a stand and you begin to talk to the tree as if she's part of your family. You hear the birds outside singing a song. This week is the Great American Bird Count. And Trey is listening to the birds and recording who is showing up in Huntsville, Alabama, for the Great American Bird Count. And so as we find ourselves connected to all life, there is a sense that the Sangha, the spiritual community, is not just human. I sit here with a penguin by my side, thanks to Barbara Rowland, my little spirit animal. And every time I sit next to him, I feel that invisible guidance system. The wisdom of the penguin is my wisdom now. I should only be so lucky. And so we come here on this Sunday morning to help each other stay awake, which is the theme for this month. To stay awake to the truth of who we are. That we are existence itself, seemingly separate but truly one life. And that one life is waking up. As the Sufis say so profoundly, this is not about you. This is about the universe. It's about God. And this God presence, this universe, is awakening within the world. It's a global awakening. And so we are experiencing it firsthand right here in the Center for Spiritual Living. We are anchored in the awakened presence. We can call it the Buddha consciousness, the Christ consciousness. We are anchored in the Sangha, the community where we inter-are. We are all part of that one life. We're not separate. And then we anchor ourselves, lastly, in the Dharma, in the truth that wakes up from within us and says it's all about sowing and reaping. What you sow is what you're going to reap. It's done unto you as you believe. Then you begin to become conscious about the belief system that you're operating from, or lack thereof. And so you smile, because life is no more a problem to be fixed, because the universe doesn't have a problem. The universe is already whole, perfect, and complete. And we're starting to identify with our true nature as wholeness, that hidden wholeness that is revealed even in the sad times, even in the difficult times. Instead of focusing on a problem, we focus on the wholeness that's inherent right there at the core of it. And then something begins to shift. And we smile, because we have returned home to the sacred presence. And we find that the sweet teachers in life are everywhere. Everything becomes a teacher. The outer teacher takes you to an inner teacher. And we begin to listen to that guidance system from within. And then we realize that the greatest teacher of all is life. And so then, instead of struggling or resisting life, we open to it in all of its pathos, in all of its heart-wrenching experience. And we allow our hearts to break wide open so that we might feel that intimacy with even the most lowly. It's with gratitude for this experience that is so sacred. My Zen calendar this week was quoting Emerson, and it shocked me. Because Emerson said, be silly. He said, be honest. And lastly, be kind. Be silly. Have a lighthearted nature. Be honest. To thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not be false to anyone. And be kind. I hear His Holiness the Dalai Lama in my mind saying, my religion is kindness. I hear Jesus saying, just love one another as I have loved you. And so today we are going to explore the agents of kindness as they show up in our life. And when you're ready to explore that with me in a playful, silly sort of way, I invite you to open your eyes and be here now. And know that it's really not a challenge, but it's really more of a game that we get to play. So here he is, sitting, waiting for me every Sunday morning just to come and be his companion. Between him and Bert, I go to the classroom and I sit down with that old dog, and he reminds me that he's still here. You know, it's so funny when you have, I'm going to have my 73rd birthday this week. And every time it comes to my birthday, I think of my mother and how she gave birth to my twin sister and myself 73 years ago. And she was very, very large. We were two over 7 pounds each. And oh. I know. And she thought she was going to explode. And I remember that when they would listen with the stethoscope, there was only one heartbeat. So the concern was that the only one of the twins is alive. So she went into this birthing experience not expecting to have two of us. But I, now that I think about it, I'm sure my twin and I were entrained, that our hearts were beating together, you know, as we're so often to do when we breathe together. And so, lo and behold, we survived. And I would always call my mother on my birthday. She's the one person, besides my twin sister, and thank her for going through what she did to give birth to this individual, encouraging all her children to be their own unique expression of who they are. And so when people reflect about Thanksgiving, as beloved Nancy did, and Christmas, and the memories that we have, I have memories of my mother on my birthday that are so sweet, and how she had an expectation of me. And I don't think I met that expectation. When people would ask about me in my hometown, she would say, what business is of theirs where you live? What business is of theirs what you do? And I said, Mom, it doesn't sound to me like you're very proud of me being a minister. Well, it's that religion that you're in. I don't know how to explain it to people. I said, I know what you mean, Mom, so you don't have to tell them I'm a sex therapist. That's a great thing to tell them. And then that'll keep the conversation. Of course, she didn't like that any more than being a minister at the center. But when you can have fun with your parents, my father's mother did not approve of my mother. She was very, very pristine. When the children would visit my grandmother on my father's side, children are to be seen and not heard. Everything was pristinely white, and we were frightened to be around her. Well, she ends up getting Alzheimer's, and my brother and I go take her from Toledo, Ohio, and bring her back, where she moves in with my mother and father. So my mother is not only taking care of my father, who had health challenges, but she's also taking care of the Alzheimer's mother-in-law who never liked her. And I watched my mother practice kindness. When my grandmother couldn't remember anything, my mother just played along with her. And my dad's name was John. She'd say, where is John? And my grandmother would say, well, he'll be coming home from school soon. And then one day she walked into the kitchen and she saw my father sitting at the kitchen table. And she screamed. She said, who's that old man sitting in my kitchen? Well, it was her son. But see, she had gotten so forgetful. And I watched my mother with this kind nature just serve, to serve the moment, not make it a bad moment. And she, you talk about silly, she would laugh. When my grandmother finally went into the nursing home, we'd go visit her, and her name was Gladys, and she'd say, oh, Gladys, what lovely curtains. And Gladys said, I made them all. mother would say, oh, well, they're just beautiful. And my mother just played along with this lady who didn't have a clue who she was. And I witnessed just being kind. My mother would tell me, and she really helped my ministry. She said, Scott, that's what they called me. She says, people are touch deprived. So every time we would go in, she would take my grandmother's withered hand and she'd hold that hand. And my little sister came with the grandchild, the little baby. And I watched this old woman with Alzheimer's reach her arms out for this baby, and my little sister holding the baby and seeing this old lady take the old life and the new life coming together in one of those sacred moments. They're little moments. They're not complicated moments. I was telling Adam, this Zen calendar is like an oracle for me, and this week was Paramahansa Yogananda. He said something about simplicity. If you can live the simplest of lives, he says, you will be the happiest and most fulfilled person on the planet. He says, so try it. Simplify your life. Because I'm speaking about kindness yesterday, I Googled up kindness, and there's a thing on YouTube called Random Acts of Kindness. You know, there's a saying to practice random acts of kindness. It was a bumper sticker. And there was experience after experience after experience, like Michael driving someone to the hospital who didn't know how to get there, or a buggy that's going down with a kid and someone rescues the buggy, or a kid in a third world country who's in a river that's and he can't swim and someone jumps in and saves the kid, or a little hedgehog who needs water and someone gives the hedgehog a drink of water, or a giraffe who got caught up in a barbed wire fence and you see this man working hard to set the giraffe free, and when he does and the giraffe runs free, the man is jumping up and down with glee. And you realize, and just watching these random acts of kindness, the ones that do them are the ones that reap the blessing. And you can say, I'm doing this kind thing for you, but no, you're doing the kind thing for yourself because it feels so good. Once you generate that thread of kindness that you extend to the world out there, because we're not separate. I was lying in bed thinking about the life that I've been lived with my partner for so many years, and he and I went over to England. I was speaking at a conference called the Abundance Conference, and we were staying in a monastery. I think there's an old monk in me that always is drawn to these monasteries, but you could stay there and it wasn't very expensive, and you'd stay in one of the monk's cells, and then you would eat in the cloister with the other monks, and the food wasn't very good. And I was getting ready to go to this event where I was going to speak, and Trey was there with me, and he said, David, look. And I said, what? He says, look on the table. And there was this little African daisy that was sitting there like this. It was just looked like it was dead. And then he pointed, every flower on every table looked dead. And, you know, he's just... So the next thing I know, we're getting the water and we're pouring the water in the little daisy. And we had the breakfast. He couldn't eat it because he was so upset. We went to the room, and in a monk's cloister, you have two little cots and a sink. That's all you have in your room. He took the African daisy and he put it in the sink and he flooded it with water. And within half an hour, life started coming back to the little African daisy. The little heads of the flowers that were down started to perk up. Well, the next thing I know, we're leaving the monastery. I have to go to the event where I'm going to speak. And he's taking the daisy with him and he puts it in the car. I said, you're not going to steal the daisy from the monastery. He said, watch me. He said, they can't take care of their own daisy. I'm going to take care. So all through England, we're driving with this African daisy on the dashboard of the car. Because he said it was his mission to make sure that this flower survived. And when we got to the end of that trip, we stayed at a place called Balcom Manor. He researches these crazy places, and it was once the palace of Princess Alice, who was the granddaughter of Queen Victoria. And you know, in England, the royals get gifts, and she was given this palace, Princess Alice, called Balcom Manor. By now, it had been in ruins, and they were renting rooms out. So he got us a room in Balcom Manor, and strangely, or perfectly, the room we ended up getting was the ballroom, where they had all the dances. And we had the little room upstairs, and there were the big urns out there, but the Balcom Manor was in rack and ruins. The greenhouses were a disaster, the grounds weren't tended. It needed a lot of kindness, a lot of TLC. Now, mind you, we're leaving to come back to the States, and I have this little African daisy that I've traveled all over Europe with, and I say, well, we're going to have to find a home for her. Now, outside of Balcom Manor, there were these two huge urns that were sitting empty. Nobody had tended them in a very long time, and the grounds were a mess, and they had moles that were digging holes, and there would be mounds of dirt where the moles had dug the grounds. So I realized, well, there's already soil for the big urns. So I went out with my little bucket, and I took the mounds of soil from the mole hills, and I put them in the big urns. And then I went around the grounds and found these rare little perennials that had seeded from years gone by. And I took the African daisy, and I put her in the grandest of urns right outside Balcombe Manor with the fresh soil from the mole holes, and watered her in, and I said, now you're going to have to rely on the rain from England to keep you alive. A little act of kindness turned into an opportunity or a responsibility that I carried with me. When Trey, in his codependent nature, went with Gigi and myself to Turkey, and we were studying with the Sufis, he noticed that the animals were thirsty, and nobody was giving them drinks of waters. We were in Ephesus, and the cats were coming out, and they were just so thirsty, and it was so hot and so dry. And he took the bottled water and poured it in the cap, and all of a sudden this cat came down and was drinking the water, a little act of kindness. Well, then he rubbed her belly and said, oh, she's pregnant. She needs the water. So he gave all the water. Then the next thing you know, we're walking around Istanbul and he's pouring water for the dogs and for the cats. Agents of kindness. And he says, you people are so concerned with your spirituality and all these people out here are thirsty. So I watched him, through his example, say, by their actions ye shall know them. I think that was Jesus that said that. So do good to those who are suffering. And that's the final exploration I'm going to do on this month of November. I wanted to, this is inspired by Mark Nepo's little book, The Book of the Soul, 52 Paths to Live Life How It Really Matters. This is the quote from Yogananda. Be as simple as you can be, Adam, and you will be astonished to see how uncomplicated and happy your life will become. I'll say that again. Be as simple as you can be, and you will be astonished to see how uncomplicated and happy your life can become. So here's how he talks about this kindness. He says, there are silken threads of kindness everywhere in the universe. It's a web that's barely visible. The connections that infuse us with resilience when we're forced or loved to find our way through what we're given. Life is going to give us challenges, you know. And could we let it guide us through kindness? Will love force us to lead the way and respond in a different way? I remember Adam picked up a homeless guy on the highway and he needed to go to Tennessee. So Adam just drove him to Tennessee because it was the kind thing to do. He says, these threads of care can be lost, but they can never be broken. To care for someone like that young man that knitted this thing and then put it around my neck and who's no longer here on the planet, every time I put it around my neck, I feel his love. So he said, for him, Mark Nepo, his grandmother was an immigrant from Russia. She was a Russian Jew who fled the country during persecution times. And he said, my grandmother is the one who taught me how to be kind, who with her weary faith and her of a sturdy immigrant, she taught me that life opens for those who dare to give. And once living in the open, there is no career we can find but being kind. My religion is kindness. His grandmother taught it. I remember my grandmother. She was a crazy lady. They were in the 30s, in the Depression, when they had the Dust Bowl. And my grandmother would go and feed the hobos. She'd go down to the train station. She called them hobos. We call them homeless now. Mm-hmm. And I always thought my grandmother was so loving to do that. She'd cook up the food and bring it down. It always comes down to this. Our willingness to walk together through the storm and share what we have with one another so that we can create a path to all that matters. It was Ram Dass that said, ultimately, it just boils down, we're here to walk each other home. When someone falls down, you extend the hand and you help them up so that we can walk together. So he's building this idea. Being human is loving the particular until it dissolves into the universal. Is that not poetic? He said, being human is loving the particular, or you might say the finite, until it takes you to the infinite. So then even the smallest of things is divine. Jesus said, if you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. So in truth, the agents of kindness, Mark Nepo says, they're everywhere. And that's the job that you and I have, is the job of being kind, to help things grow. And he says, watering seeds can change the world, but, now this is the profound part, but the chance to do the watering will change your life. When you water a seed, when you take care of something, you're helping something out there. But if you can experience yourself as the giver, the one being kind, well, that can change you. And he says, for the heart of gratitude is giving and receiving. And this is the exhale and the inhalation of relationships that keep us well. It's all about giving and receiving, and they're two sides of the same coin. You know, I love to quote, I don't know who it was, I think it was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, that said, when you die, you're going to be asked two things. You're going to be asked, while you were here on earth, how well did you give and receive love? And the second thing is, how well did you serve? Now, that's all about being an agent of kindness, an agent who wants to serve the one in the many by opening our hearts and allowing that shared intimacy become our practice with every day. You know, how you do anything, as we're learning in the Richard Rohr book, is how you do everything. So Trey and I got the Christmas tree on Thanksgiving, and we put it up, and we're not very adept at putting trees up. And by the time we screwed it into the stand and gave it a big drink of water, the tree was kind of on a tilt like this. I called it the leaning Christmas tree of Pisa. And, you know, as much as we tried to straighten it, it kept going like this and straighten it going like this. And the two of us were kind of beside ourselves, so we put the lights on it, we hung the ornaments on it, and she's still hanging like this. The next morning I came down, I said, honey, do you think that tree is going to stand? And he says, I don't know. We've had them fall in the past. So then in my brilliant, creative mind, I lifted up the stand upon which the tree was, and I put a little brick under it. Well, with that little help of the brick, now she's perfectly vertical, and I don't have to, and I can put the little towel around the bottom so nobody knows that I cheated. And, you know, I felt like I was doing a kind thing for a tree and for the house. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be perfect. Every morning I go out, and I have one koi left in the pond. His name is Napoleon Solo. And every morning I go out, and he goes, whoa, and I go, and I put him his food out. And do I do that for him, or do I do that for me? You know, when I forget to feed him, I feel like I've neglected him. We've moved in our houseplants with Adam's help. I think we must have 100 houseplants in the house. And they all require attention. Not only do they need to be watered and tended and rotated in the sunlight, but oftentimes there's dead leaves and plants. So part of my spiritual practice and Trey's spiritual practice is to nurture these children of ours. This little Ming Aurelia over here was at the original church. She was a twig when we put her in there. And they all have a story. They all have a history. They're all part of our family. I think it was Dave Seaborg that brought in that beautiful ficus, Benjamina, and he'd had for a long, long time. I know, you left it here at the center, but I gave it to Adam, and now it's in his house. Because another plant to tend, sometimes we get to spread them out. So when I make my transition, you're all getting at least 5 or 6 house plants that you get to then take care of, because I'll leave them in my will. So, yeah. Turning 73, Trey gave me a book called Grace and Aging, How to Awaken as You Grow Older. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful book about aging is not for the faint of heart, but also it can be a time when we reach a maturity. You know, when you're young, you pursue goals and ambitions and you're concerned about what the world thinks. When you get older, you're more attached to meaning and purpose and finding something that opens your heart. Lee and I were talking about honoring the creative process that gets more and more intimate. And sometimes you need a muse to catalyze that creative something. And so this beautiful lady comes from the Buddhist tradition. And she talks about kindness in a paradoxical way. And everything is paradox. Because when you open to truth, you have to hold paradox. You have to hold polar opposites. Like when we're talking about the holidays and being happy. Well, sometimes the happiness is cloaked in sadness. So could we not try to get rid of the sadness, but let the sadness and the happiness coexist? Let the darkness and the light coexist. Let the confusion and the anxiety that's on our planet right now also exist with a hopefulness that we can evolve as a species. Then you are, you got a whole brain way of operating on, in life. You're not seeing it as a problem to be fixed. You're seeing it as a beautiful portal for a transformation. And it has to start within us. Everything's an inside job. First, this one has to awaken, and then the outer awakens, and then hopefully the world awakens. So let me give you just a taste of this, my birthday present. His Holiness the Dalai Lama so beautifully and simply put his religion by saying, "My religion is kindness." And here's the poem that they use. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside you, you must also know sorrow as the deepest thing inside you. Michael knows what that sorrow is all about. You must wake up with sorrow, and you must speak to it until your voice catches the thread of all sorrow. So it's not just my sorrow, it's the sorrow of the planet. There's a sadness on this planet because there's been an awful lot of destruction, an awful lot of death. Think of how many people have lost loved ones to this COVID thing. So he says, could we open to the sorrow of the planet and not push it away? We must speak to this sorrow with our voice and then catch the thread of all sorrow, and then you see the size of the cloth, the context in which this arises. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. It is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that can tie our shoes. Only kindness that sends you into the day to mail letters and to purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for. You have been looking for this covenant with kindness, with the gentle-heartedness, and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow with you. My religion is kindness. You know, you've heard me teach the loving-kindness meditation in the Buddhist tradition. I am filled, may I be filled with loving-kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease, and may I be happy. You start with yourself, then you go to the ones you love. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease, and may you be happy, conferring a blessing out there. Then you can look at the whole planet. May we, as a species, be filled with loving kindness toward one another, toward the little penguins in Antarctic. May we be well, knowing that is our true nature. May we be peaceful and at ease, and may we be happy. Wow. As we embrace the suffering of the planet. So she goes on in her beautiful Buddhist sort of way to explain this. May we all daily grow until we know and embody the boundless states that we all share. Whether it's the sorrow that leads to peace, that leads to contentment, that leads to acceptance, that leads to trust, that leads to hope. Boy, may we all calmly abide in the equanimity of all these boundless states. There's equanimity in hope and in despair, in sorrow and in peace. I remember when Ellen Morgan lost her husband, Ernie, and he went in for a knee transplant, and he had a blood thing go to the brain, and he just passed, he died in the hospital from a simple knee replacement. And she asked me to read the Khalil Gibran thing on faith. Or was it, the gift of love. But it says you cannot know the love until you know the sorrow. And so as I'm speaking at Ernie's funeral, I realized there was great sadness there, but there was also great love there. Could we find the equanimity of all these boundless states? And then she says, until we do this, may we all take refuge each day in the Buddha, which is the awakened state of utterly purified goodness. God the good, God the true, God the beautiful. Take refuge in that as your true nature. May we all take refuge each day in the Dharma, which is the utterly clear wisdom of truth that arises from within. And may we all take refuge each day in a Sangha, which is the utterly beloved beauty of our inner beingness. You know, we can think of the Sangha as the community that we come together in, but what if it's this inner beingness that we have with a tree, with a seedling, with a penguin, you know, with a hedgehog, with a butterfly? Okay, may we each take refuge in this Sangha, the utterly beloved beauty of inner being, and may we do that no matter what our spiritual path is. The Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha are refuges, the three jewels of the practice. And then she builds upon this simple idea. The Buddha simply means the awakened awareness, awareness resting in ultimate reality. Now, when I read something like that, I just touch that space in me, and could I rest in the awake awareness of the open heart? They call it in Buddhism the bodhicitta, the heart of the awakened one. Just rest there, huh? You don't have to be thinking thoughts. You can just kind of breathe in, breathe out, and it's not you. You've taken refuge in the awakened one. And this is all the Buddha. There's an old saying, if you see the Buddha by the side of the road, kill him. Kind of a violent statement, but it's basically saying, it's not out there, it's everywhere, because it's in here. And once it awakens here, it sees itself everywhere. So that's the first one. Then he says, the Sangha is simply the utterly interdependent appearance of all of us. All of us. The greatest sign of oneness is diversity. Could we take refuge in the allness, in the diversityness of all of us? And then the Dharma is the truth that mediates between the Buddha and the Sangha. Dharma holds the seeming paradox of two, the paradox of two, the conditioned and the unconditioned, form and formlessness in one taste, where it says everything is sacred. Now, these are simple but profound ideas. Thank you, Yogananda. And they take us to a place of deepest acceptance when we can open to the grace, the beauty, the God, the good, the God, the true, and the beautiful, even in the smallest of things. And the simple act of acknowledging it there. Karen Drucker has a song that I sing to myself oftentimes. She says, I will be gentle with myself. I will be tender with my heart. And I'll hold myself like a newborn baby child. Now, could we start by being kind to ourselves? I will be gentle with myself. I will be tender with my heart. And I'll hold myself like a newborn baby child. And then because we're in the Western world, we're a culture of doers. Do, 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 achieve, achieve, achieve. And then she says in her second little verse, and I will only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. And I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of me feels safe to go. And once you can practice that simple act of being gentle and kind with yourself, being kind and gentle with your heart, well, then when your neighbor is suffering, I will be gentle with my neighbor. I will be gentle with my children. I will be gentle with my grandmother who has Alzheimer's, you know, and I'll hold her like a newborn baby child. I remember Trey's mother, she got Alzheimer's, and she did not accept our relationship at all. And so for 25 years, I didn't exist. But then the good news is that when she got Alzheimer's, she forgot all the prejudice that she had. And when she met me, finally, she says, so who are you? And I said, I'm Johnny's twin brother. Don't you remember me? And she laughed. And all that animus that was there just fell away. And she would sit on her bed with this mind that was gone, but the heart that was so open, and she'd swing her legs like a little girl on the edge of the bed. And I found myself having a relationship with a little girl sitting on a bed who had Alzheimer's and who had forgotten all the programming, all the thoughts, and I was there just to be kind to her. She went in for some heart valve thing, and I gave her a little quartz heart that was in the shape of a heart, and she held that throughout the whole surgery. And so here's someone who had rejected me, who received a quartz heart when she had open heart surgery, and somehow in that simple act of kindness, whatever wall had been built up just fell away. And that may not have been a big thing, but it was a thing. And so when she did make her transition, strangely enough, or maybe not strangely, Trey and I were in Acamal, Mexico. There was a big family trip planned around Christmas time. So everybody flies into Mexico, and the very day we arrived was the day that she made her transition. She was living in Maine. And being the minister, they asked me to say something. And so all the family members were sitting at the table that night, and her name was Bucky. And I said, let's go around the table and say what Bucky meant to the family. And without exception, everybody said how kind she was and how loving she was, until it got to Trey. And he realized that he didn't experience that kindness. He experienced the rejection. But in a holy instant, by his willingness to meet that sorrow and that pattern of maybe rejection, he found an opening for kindness. And so I saw the sacredness of that And how appropriate that I would be the one to weave the threads together. And so what if in life we get these sometimes jolts that pull us back and forth so that we can then navigate in a different way? My beloved Terry knows what I mean with her aunt. You begin to see them not as the enemy, and then you begin to love what Jesus would say is the enemy, and even the kindness then is extended to the one that you think you couldn't possibly ever go beyond that. So that's the beautiful thing, I think, in helping each other stay awake, to be these simple agents of kindness. And it's the simple thing, like driving someone to Tennessee who doesn't have it. Or my neighbor lady, she loves the camellias that grow in my garden. And so her name is Diane. And so I'll pick these big bouquets of camellias and I'll bring them up to her front porch. And the man that she lived with for many years, his birthday was, I think it was November, whatever it was. The day I brought the flowers was his birthday. And so I didn't know that it was his birthday. And she put the flowers in a vase, one of his many accumulated vases, on his stand. And she sent me a photograph saying, Tim would have loved these flowers. A simple act of kindness. And I said, you know, he's still here. And then she said, yes. And I think we had that moment. So what if the opportunity is just a simple act of giving somebody a flower can take them into a beautiful sense of intimacy with a loved one who's no longer here in form, but is here in essence. And that simple act brought him out of the closet, you might say, to the living. So let's do a little closing. I'll ask my brother Raul to go to the bell, and we will have an experience of that innate, inherent kindness that exists within all creation. When I watched my life as a turkey, I watched this man become so kind to these little birds that he was actually gobbling to them, and they were gobbling back to him. And he says, after 3 months, I learned to speak Turkey. He understood their language just because he opened his heart to these little fledglings. So Raul, when you're ready, take us into the magic bell for whom the bell tolls. It's a call to stop. And to observe. To observe this amazing thing called the body that we all have. We've been given this body. And when I become conscious of the body, I like to align my body by letting my shoulders come back so I can make my spine nice and strong. As a dancer, you learn to do certain things that help align your body. And whenever I align my body to the present moment, I feel connected. It's as if there's an access point to the universe through the crown chakra. And then it's through the feet, I can feel the energy moving down into Pachamama, the earth. And so then I can envision this body as the threshold between heaven and earth. And we are a receiving system. We receive the input and the output from the divine intelligence. And so beyond local thought, there is this infinite thought. There is this wisdom, this intuition. And we open to that. And we notice how benign it is. My beloved Gigi changed the marquee outside, and she put phrases like, be a blessing. And so we feel ourselves as a blessing in the world, where the particular is taking us into the universal, where the finite self is taking us into this infinite presence. And as we experience the sangha of inner beingness, we realize that even the smallest of these is an aspect of this one life. Whether it's a fledgling turkey, wild turkey, whether it's a little African daisy on a trip somewhere, it's all the one life revealing herself through diversity. And we witness it. It says in the Quran, when you remember him, he remembers you. And so what if we're here just remembering that everywhere we look, we see the face of God, because it's all the face of God. And we look out into the galaxies and we see the face of God. And we look at a shell on a beach and we see the face of God. We hold a seed in our hand and we see the potential of life ready to give birth. And the entelechy of a seed is the intelligence. In an acorn, it has the entelechy of an oak tree. And so something as humble as an acorn, we know has the potential to become the oak. And so if we can know this about an acorn, could we know, as Meister Eckhart said, there is a God seed within all creation. Could we allow the God seed within our own being to begin to grow? And without thinking too much or outlining it with an idea, just breathe into the potential and possibility of how that might flower in the body of your experience. This divine presence has qualities. You know, one of them is compassion. When they speak of Allah, they talk about the benevolence of Allah, mean the givingness of Allah. They talk about the mercifulness of Allah, that it cares for all creation. They talk about the justice in Allah, that this universe has a sense of justice and order. Could we allow that to flower within our awareness so that when we sit consciously in these chairs, we're not just a separate skin-encapsulated ego with an identity and an ego, but we are the whole universe awakening to this open-hearted bodhicitta, the heart of the One. And then we hear Jesus, just love one another. That's all you have to do, as I have loved you. Not as something separate, but as a part of the One. And if we stay awake in the heart of the One, if the heart of the One stays awake in us, well, then we see beauty everywhere we look, because we're looking through the eyes of beauty. We see the God, the good in everything. And we recognize the truth. The truth that hides itself sometimes underneath masks of forgetfulness. But we come here to remember. And then we hear that song, Try to Remember. That kind of September when life was free and oh so gentle. Try to remember. And if you remember, then follow, follow, follow me. We follow the example of the kind-hearted one, of the one who smiles, the one who has expressions of random acts of kindness. And we recognize that this is enough to be gentle with ourselves, to practice loving kindness, and to witness wherever we look the face of God. And in that, feel gratitude in our hearts. Because we have arrived, we are home, and the kingdom of heaven is within and all around, and we witness it. Resting as that awareness right now, in a gentle, loving way, feeling the Dharma, the truth within, feeling the Sangha, the inner beingness with all life, and awakening the Buddha consciousness that stays awake. That's what we are. So place your hand over your heart, feeling that deep, deep connection, and say with me the heart salutation, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
You are the one that knows no other. This beloved presence in me. Sees the beloved presence everywhere revealed.
Knowing it is the one life,
God's life, my life, perfect in all its beauty. And we celebrate this diversity with wild abandon and creative expectancy, trusting and knowing that we are what we have been looking for. And we are the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody comes to the Father but by we. We are the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody comes to the Father but by we, and the we consciousness has given birth. The we consciousness is on the move, and that is what we are, is the we consciousness. Thank you, Wayne Dyer. Thank you all for being here. Happy Thanksgiving. Be grateful. Christmas awaits. And be safe. Wear your masks. Thanks for sending in your tithes out there in virtual world.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.